Good morning, everyone. I call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is 9:07 a.m. on Tuesday, March 24th, 2026. Present today are Representative Allard, Representative Stapp, Representative Moore, Representative Bynum, Representative Hannon, Representative Tomaszewski, Representative Galvin, Representative Jimmy, Co-Chair Schrage, Co-Chair Foster, and myself, Co-Chair Josephson. Also present today are House Finance Committee staff, Committee Assistant Helen Phillips, Paige Tallulah-Lestufka, Secretary Bree Wiley, and Secretary Leah Frazier. We also have our moderator, Emily Mesh, from the Legislative Information Office. Before we start, please mute your cell phones. At this meeting, the committee will be introducing and asking to adopt committee substitutes for House Bill 263 and House Bill 265, the FY27 operating and mental health bills, respectively. In committee members' packets are the following: HB 263 work draft version 0, HB 263 redline comparison between version H and version O, HB 263 version H to version O summary of changes, HB 265 work draft version H, HB 265 redline comparison between version G and version H, agency summary totals, all funds, agency summary totals, UGF only, House Committee Substitute 2 to House Committee Substitute 3, Transaction Compare, House Committee Substitute 3, Department of Family and Community Services and Department of Health, Wordage Report. The Legislative Finance Division is in the room for any technical questions during this meeting. So we will begin by first my asking Co-Chair Schrage for a motion on whether to adopt the first committee substitute for House, that's the third committee substitute for House Bill 263 version O. Co-Chair Schrage.
Mr. Co-Chair, I move that the House Finance Committee adopt committee substitute for House Bill 263 Finance, work draft 34-GH2498/O, marks, dated March 21st, 2026, as our working document.
Okay. I will object for the purposes of an explanation and call my staff, Alexander Schroeder, forward to explain the changes in version O.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Question.
Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson, to the chair. Can we, before, when we go through this process, can we just make sure, or the request I have is that we are very clear on which version of the document we're using, if we're going to use the spreadsheet that was given, or if we're actually going to use the redline version of the document, and just be clear on how we're going to walk through it so that we're not trying to have confusion at the beginning here.
Sure.
That's my request. Thank you.
Mr. Schroeder, what is your preference, or what do you recommend in terms of what you're going to do next, the red line version or the completed work draft?
For the record, Alexander Schroeder, through the chair, either the red line or the summary of changes can be used to walk through the presentation that I'm about to give.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Go ahead, Mr. Schroeder.
Good morning, members of the House Finance Committee. For the record, my name is Alexander Schroeder, staff to Co-Chair Josephson. Before we begin, I would like to clarify for the record, what is House Committee Substitute 3 or HCS3? HCS3 refers to the combination of HB 263 version O, the operating bill, and HB 265 version H, the mental health bill. The Legislative Finance Division reports and members' packets today refer to both bills when tracking totals and item changes. Before the committee is a proposed committee substitute for House Bill 263, the operating bill, work draft 34GH2498/O. If I may, I would like to begin by breaking up the changes into a couple categories, and then I will walk through the items. The categories of changes in the committee substitute are the following: technical corrections, modifications to subcommittee items, over-appropriated fund sources, reverted items in the adjusted base, Governor's March 13th amendments, and new items. technical corrections are largely found in the language section. Some technical corrections are previous language section items that were moved to the numbers section, such as the Alaska Arctic Winter Games Trust Fund percent of market value draw. Some subcommittee items were modified, such as the University of Alaska non-union salary adjustments or the Office of Children's Services intent language. Some items had over-appropriated fund sources, such as the use of the Employment Assistance and Training Program account funds, otherwise known as STEP funds, for the Office of Citizenship Assistance, or vehicle rental tax receipts for revenue-generating facilities in the Department of Natural Resources. Some items impacted by reverting to an adjusted base in HCS1, such as 75% funding for school bond debt reimbursement and regional educational attendance area fund deposits, were restored to the governor's proposal. There was $18.2 million in governor amendments submitted March 13th. These items included monetary terms for the Alaska Correctional Officers Association, Alaska Higher Education Crafts and Trades Employees, and Fairbanks Firefighters Union Local 1324. And lastly, new items were added in the numbers section, such as child care recruitment and retention, and the language section, such as five-year average fire suppression and disaster relief. Now I will walk through the changes in the number section before moving on to the language section. This walkthrough is designed to be followed by either using the red line or in your packets or the summary of changes document. It may be easier for members to follow along using the summary of changes in the numbers section and the red line for the language section. Beginning with section one, the numbers section. On page 3, line 5 in the Department of Administration Division of Personnel Allocation, the co-chair added a one-time increment of $1 million UGF. This item is a geographic pay differential study. Under Alaska Statute 3927020, the Division of Personnel Director is required to conduct a survey every 5 years to review geographic pay differentials, yet there has not been an appropriation for this item since 2008. On page 4, lines 30 and 31 in the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, Community and Regional Affairs allocation, the percent of market value draw for the Alaska Arctic Winter Games Trust Fund to the Alaska Arctic Winter Games was moved from the language section to the numbers section and adjusted to match the actual draw rather than the estimated to be at $9,400.
Representative Bynum, do you have a question?
Yes, thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. Just again for clarity, it looks I have the red line version draft, working draft in front of me, version O. And then I also have this summary document of changes for CS2 to CS3. It says page and line reference to red line document. So my understanding is that the summary document that I have here should match what's going on in the red line document. But when I go through this red line document, for example, the very first change that we had was page 3, line 5. However, in the red line document, the very first change we have is actually on page 2, line 10. And then when we skip through, you have page 3, line 5. That is there. Page 4, lines 30 and 31. That is there. But then the next document, the next item in the summary of changes is page 5, lines 11 through 12, but that is not reflected in our red line version as a change. So it just appears that there might be some conflict in these documents that I have in front of me. And if I'm wrong, I'd like somebody to kind of demonstrate that to me. Well, so if we could take a brief at ease and somebody could show me, I'm just not sure where the conflict is and what I'm seeing.
Through the chair.
All right. I think that part of this is this document that's marked HB 263 operating bill summary of changes is meant to be provide highlighted items. Given the redlining, I don't mean to say highlighted in that way. It's a summary of changes. Not every change is one answer. But go ahead, Mr. Schroeder.
For the record, Alexander Schroeder, the summary of changes refers to the allocation change in the red line, not the appropriation change. So for the first item, the Division of Personnel Geographic Pay Differential Study, centralized administrative services is impacted because it's the appropriation. But the summary of change is referring to the second page, specifically the personnel allocation.
Okay. Thank you for the clarification.
Okay. Please continue, Mr. Schroeder.
On page 5, lines 11 and 12, in the corporation's business and professional licensing allocation, here there's a fund swap of $2.1 million UGF to $2.1 million receipt services for professional license investigators. This item undoes the DCCED subcommittee item. The governor requested replacing $4.2 million in receipt services for UGF. Upon further review, the co-chair believes that the status quo, meaning denial of the governor's item, is better. There is no red line change here because the total GF remains the same. On page 8, line 3 to page 9, line 12 in the Department of Corrections, the governor's March 13th amendments included monetary terms of agreement for the Alaska Correctional Officers Association. This committee substitute adopts those cost of living adjustments. The total cost for those appropriations is $8.6 million UGF. On page 9, lines 21 through 29, in the population management allocation, the DOC subcommittee narrative asks that the House Finance Committee consider this intent language. It was not added in HCS2, so it is added here in HCS3. On page 11, line 13, the Department of Education teacher certification allocation. The DEED subcommittee adopted an increment of $490,000 for teacher recruitment and retention. However, the co-chair believes it is more appropriate in the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. A corresponding increase is in Department of Labor. On page 14, lines 8 through 14, in the Department of Family and Community Services, this conditional language was reduced from $7.5 million down to $5 million and restricted these transfers from the Office of Children's Services. DFCS is also asked to provide a report of these transfers to the co-chairs of the finance committees. On page 14, line 17, in the Alaska Pioneer Homes Payment Assistance Allocation, the governor requested an increment of $5.3 million as part of his March 13th amendments. This funding is to better align the payment assistance program with the evolving needs of the residents. Staying on page 14, line 21 in the Pioneer Homes allocation, the governor introduced language appropriating $3 million in statutory designated program receipts for pharmaceuticals to residents in the Alaska Pioneer Homes. Although it was estimated to be, this SDPR item was more appropriate in the numbers section. Moving to the numbers section, that DFCS felt more comfortable with a firm $4 million of SDPR. On page 14, line 33 through page 16, line 20, in the Children's Services allocation, the DFCS subcommittee adopted an amendment with a number of intent language additions to Children's Services. During the adoption of HCS3, we mentioned we would clean up the language. Here you will see careful modifications to the language to better achieve the intent of the wordage. On page 21, lines 17 through 19, in the Department of Health, mirroring the intent language in DFCS, this wordage asks that DOH provide a report on cross-appropriation transfers to the co-chairs of the Finance Committee. On page 22, line 21, in the child care benefits allocation, an increment of $7.5 million was added for child care workforce recruitment and retention. This appropriation is intended to be directly distributed to child care workers and educators. On page 24, line 10, in the senior benefits and payment program allocation, an increment of $1.4 million was requested by the governor on March 13th. This funding is to address expected caseload growth in the senior benefits program. On page 25, line 3, in the Medicaid services allocation, the Guidehouse recommendations included a Medicaid rate adjustment for direct support professionals. However, these adjustments were not included by the governor or the DOH subcommittee. This appropriation is half of the Guidehouse recommendations for this workforce, meaning an increment of $5.1 million general fund match and $6.1 million federal receipts. On page 25, line 16, in the Department of Labor and Workforce Development Commissioner's Office allocation, the DLWD subcommittee removed a vacant deputy commissioner position and a filled special assistant two position. The total funding for those items was $84,400 UGF and $343,800 interagency receipts. This CS only restores the Special Assistant 2 position and the associated funding, but it replaces the $84,400 UGF with $84,400 interagency receipts for a total of $218,700 in interagency receipts. On page 25, lines 20 and 21 in the Office of Citizenship Assistance Allocation, the Labor Subcommittee swapped $478,900 in UGF for an equal amount of STEP funds. However, this overappropriated the fund source by that amount and was not an appropriate use of the funds. This item restores the UGF to the Office of Citizenship Assistance. A corresponding fund swap in the Alaska Vocational Technical Center, a more appropriate use of the fund. There's also a language item addressing the overappropriation of STEP funds. There is no red line change here because the total general fund remains the same. On page 26, line 27 in the workforce services allocation, earlier I mentioned that $490,000 UGF was removed from DEED for recruitment and retention and instead appropriated to the Department of Labor. This item reflects that move between agencies. On page 27, line 6 in the client services allocation, this item is an increment of $178,600 in general fund match and $448,500 in federal receipts that was requested by the governor for job reclassification changes related to vocational rehabilitation positions. On page 27, lines 10 and 11 in the Alaska Vocational Technical Center allocation, this is the corresponding fund swap of STEP funds to a more appropriate use of the fund source. On page 27, lines 21 through 31 in the Department of Law, Criminal Division, $2 million in UGF increments over various allocations was requested by the governor on March 13th. These appropriations are meant to address increased operating costs in light of reduced vacancy rates in the division. On page 31, line 17, in the Department of Natural Resources, Division of Agriculture, the DNR subcommittee agreed to maintain HCS1's reverting of the Department of Agriculture back to a Division of Agriculture under DNR. A transfer out was rejected, but a transfer in was erroneously accepted, resulting in the creation of a commissioner's office in the Division of Agriculture. This item corrects that error by removing the allocation and the associated funding. On page 36, line 13, in the Department of Revenue, Alaska Sustainable Energy Corporation allocation, the enrolled budget last year decremented $54,200 UGF from an unfilled Green Bank position. This reflected half the cost or 6 months of that position. The position since has been filled, but the funding has not been restored. This item funds the remaining 6 months of that position. On page 40, lines 4 and 5 in the Department of Transportation, Northern Region Highways and Aviation allocation, the DNR subcommittee overappropriated vehicle rental tax receipts using the receipts for revenue-generating facilities. An additional VRT receipts are overappropriated by slightly more than what the DNR subcommittee put forward. This item takes the total overappropriation of VRT receipts equaling $2.1 million and fund swaps the use of these funds with equivalent UGF and DOT. There is no red line change here because the total GF remains the same. On page 41, lines 9 and 10 in the University of Alaska, budget reductions, additions, statewide allocation, what you see here is three items. The first is a fund swap of $2.9 million UGF with university receipts. The UA subcommittee appropriated this amount above the Board of Regents' request for non-union salary adjustments, so this item aligns the appropriation with the Board of Regents' request. The second and third items add the governor's March 13th amendments on the monetary terms of agreement for the Fairbanks Firefighter Union, Local 1324, and the Alaska Higher Education Crafts and Trades, Local 6070, totaling $12,800 UGF and $747,300 UGF, respectively. There's a corresponding language section authorizing these expenditures in the language section. On page 44, line 23, in the legislature, security services allocation, this item is a one-time increment of $15,000 in statutory designated program receipts to allow the Legislative Affairs Agency to accept grant funding from the National Conference of State Legislatures. This grant funding is for security improvements. And that concludes the changes in the numbers section. Unless there are questions, I'll move on to the language section, which begins on page 58.
Okay. Please continue, Mr. Schroeder.
On page 58, line 5 in section 5, the phrase estimated to be zero was removed. In the last 2 of 3 years, the appropriation for the Alaska court system went into effect and was above $0. Therefore, for transparency, that phrase was removed. On page 59, lines 8 through 22, in section 7, subsections A and B, the governor submitted an Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority dividend of $17 million, equivalent to 25% of ADA's statutory net income. Statute allows a dividend up to 50% of their statutory net income. This amendment increases their dividend to the general fund by $10 million, or about 40% of their statutory net income. On page 59, line 23, to page 60, line 1, in subsection C, the CS added language from the FY26 enrolled budget, which appropriates ADA earnings back to ADA. On page 60, line 15 through 18, in section 8, subsection E, restores the governor's proposed language and an amount for inflation proofing to the Alaska Permanent Fund. On page 60, lines 15 through 26, in subsections F and G, this mirrors language from the FY26 enrolled budget, and these new subsections highlight investment management costs for transparency. On page 60, line 27, to page 62, line 6, in section 9, subsections A through C, it adds, after appropriations made in section 1 to all 3 subsections, Alaska Technical and Vocational Education Program account funds are split between administrative costs and grants. This language ensures that administrative costs are covered first, and if not enough remaining funds are available, then the grants will be prorated. The governor's language could lead to overspending of the funds by not accounting for those costs in the grant amounts. On page 62, lines 7 through 9, in subsection D, transfers any lapsing balance of TVET funds to the Unemployment Trust Fund to comply with Alaska Statute 23.15.830. On page 62, lines 10 through 29, in section 10, mirrors language in the FY26 enrolled budget related to bonuses for executive branch employees. The Office of Management and Budget shall submit to the legislature copies of and report on letters of agreement for payment of bonuses and other monetary terms. On page 63, lines 11 through 16, in section 11, subsection D, here it increases the Group Health and Life Benefits Fund estimated balance from $10 million to $26.3 million for transparency. This estimate is based on the Department of Administration's estimate of usage. On page 63, lines 27 through 30, in subsection G, here it mirrors FY26 enrolled language and language in previous years, limits covered actuarial costs to bills in the finance committees of both bodies. On page 65, lines 15 through 23, in section 12, subsection I, this subsection removes a previous appropriation and adds a new appropriation. The committee substitute removes the Arctic Winter Game Team Alaska Trust Fund POMV draw. Earlier I mentioned we added this draw in the numbers section. The committee substitute adds a new appropriation mirroring language in the FY26 enrolled budget related to National Rifle Association license plate fees. These fees are appropriated here to the Alaska STCP, a nonprofit for maintenance of scholastic clay targets and other youth shooting programs, instead of to the general fund. Staying on page 65, lines 24 through 27, subsection J, here it appropriates $10 million from the general fund to DCCED for community assistance payments. This is a direct distribution rather than depositing it into the fund. Paired with an appropriation to the fund later in this walkthrough, the total FY27 community assistance distribution is $30 million in HCS3. On page 66, lines 14 through 19, in section 13, subsection D, clarifies that arts license plate fees are appropriated to the Alaska Council on the Arts for the purposes described in statute. The previous section was limited to just the celebration of the arts license plate program, but statute allows the Arts State Council on the Arts to use it for a variety of purposes. On page 66, lines 20 through 27 in subsection E, this subsection removes a previous appropriation and adds a new appropriation. The committee substitute removes the SDPR for the Alaska Pioneer Homes. Earlier I mentioned that this item was moved to the numbers section. The committee substitute then adds a new appropriation. This appropriation is $158.6 million UGF for one-time education funding. There's contingency language related to this item I will mention later in the walkthrough. On page 67, lines 4 through 7, in section 15, subsection B, the governor submitted this item on February 17th. It was a language item, therefore not added by the DOE subcommittee. Marrying language in HB 289, the governor's supplemental bill, this appropriation gives the authorization to receive rural health transformation program funds from the federal government in FY27. On page 68, lines 2 through 29, section 16, subsections E through I. Subsection E appropriates the remaining STEP funds in FY27 after appropriations in the numbers section to the Department of Labor for grants under the State Employment Assistance Training Program. Subsection F states that if there are not enough STEP funds to cover the operating costs mentioned in subsection E, then general funds, which are estimated to be $307,200, will cover the shortfall. Subsection G lists the programs covered under the two previous subsections. Subsection 8 states that any revenue deposited into the Employment Assistance and Training Program account that exceeds the amounts in the previous section and the numbers section is appropriated to the Department of Labor for additional grants. And subsection I directs any lapsing state funds to the Unemployment Compensation Fund. On page 69, line 30 to page 70, line 2, in section 19, here it restores items proposed by the governor. The Department of Revenue has a new structure of profit-sharing agreements and requires paying externally managed investments. On page 70, lines 3 through 12, in section 20, subsection A, $3.5 million was appropriated to pay for Alaska Marine Highway System salary adjustments based on the July 1, 2026 increases for the three AMHS-specific unions. To approve a bargaining unit contract, the legislature must specifically appropriate funds for that purpose, which this item fulfills. Also, to be eligible for the full AMHS federal grant, this additional funding is required to meet the maintenance of equity requirement. On page 70, lines 13 through 18 in subsection B, what you see here is AMHS backstop language covering the possibility that federal grant funding does not arrive between July 1, 2026 and roughly the end of March 2027. DOT reports that calendar year 2026 and calendar year 2027 Federal Transit Administration Rural Ferry Awards are expected to both arrive in fiscal year 2027. If neither award is granted in FY27, then this backstop funding kicks in. The estimated amount is $0 because it is unlikely neither award will be granted. The not-to-exceed amount of $49.5 million UGF is based off the average rural ferry grant reward received over the past 3 years. On page 73, line 21 to page 74, line 6, in section 23, subsections G, 11, and 12, these are the arbitrage rebates on international airport bonds removed in HCS-1 because they were not part of the adjusted base. On page 75, lines 11 through 17, in subsection L, HCS-1 reverted the school bond debt reimbursement amount to 75% funding level, consistent with the adjusted base. This appropriation of $10.3 million UGF restores the state aid cost state aid for cost of school construction to 100% statutory level. This committee substitute also makes a technical correction, fund swapping $100,000 between the school fund and the general fund, aligning the item with the governor's amended budget. On page 76, lines 9 through 13, in section 24, subsection E, mirroring language from the FY26 enrolled budget, this restricts the Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation from requesting a revised program legislative to the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee. On page 76, lines 26 and 27, in section 25, subsection C, this increases the disaster relief fund deposit to the five-year average if you're taking into account the $75 million UGF appropriated in HB 289, the supplemental bill. The governor requested $24 million UGF. HCS-1 reduced the number to $13 million UGF. This committee substitute increases the deposit to $38.8 million UGF. On page 77, lines 7 through 15 in subsections G1 and 2, this is a technical correction to the state aid calculation to avoid over-appropriation of the public school trust fund. There's a fund swap of $848,800 between the public school trust fund and the general fund. On page 77, lines 19 through 21 in subsection I, like the school bond debt reimbursement section, HCS1 reverted the regional educational attendance area and small municipal school district school fund amount to 75% funding level, consistent with the adjusted base. This appropriation of $4.9 million, UGF restores the appropriation to 100% statutory level. On page 79, lines 6 through 10, in subsection S, here it makes a technical correction to the power cost equalization deposit to the Community Assistance Fund. To account for investment management fees related to the PCE fund, a fund swap of $1.7 million was necessary between the PCE fund and the general fund for this appropriation. The end result is the same. The total distribution for community assistance in FY27 is $30 million. On page 79, lines 17 and 18 in subsection U, here it increases the fire suppression fund deposit to the five-year average. The governor requested $47.5 million UGF, matching the adjusted base. This committee substitute increases the deposit to $60.6 million UGF. On page 81, lines 8 and 9 in section 26, subsection K, here it appropriates $5.3 million UGF to the Renewable Energy Grant Fund to fund the top three projects. Appropriations out of this fund live in the capital budget. On page 81, lines 10 through 12 in subsection L, $425,000 of WAMI Medical Education Program loan repayments are directed from the general fund to the Alaska Higher Education Investment Fund. This is consistent with the fund source of the WAMI program, and consequently, the result is an increase of $425,000 in general funds. On page 81, lines 13 through 30 in subsections M and N, here it restores the governor's proposed FY26 oil and hazardous substance release prevention fund surcharge deposit. On page on the same page, line 31 to page 82, line 17 in subsections O and P, it adds an equivalent FY26 oil and hazardous substance release prevention fund surcharge deposit instead of waiting to place it in the FY27 supplemental. On page 82, lines 18 through 20 in subsection Q, it appropriates $10 million from the oil hazardous and substance release prevention fund to the general fund. The recent Flint Hill settlement payout related to a sulfalane groundwater plume in North Pole, Alaska was approximately $24.5 million. This appropriation to the general fund still leaves the SPAR account self-sufficient throughout the next 10 years. On page 83, lines 2 through 23 in section 28, subsection A, here it references AMHS and salary adjustments omitted by the governor's proposed budget. On page 83, line 2 to page 84, line 2, in subsections A and B, adds the three monetary terms of agreement mentioned earlier during the number section walkthrough. On page 86, lines 18 through 22, in section 31, appropriates $50 million UGF to the statutory budget reserve fund. On the same page, line 26 to page 87, line 2, in section 33, adds retroactivity language to all effective dates, not just the carry forward of specific accounts. And lastly, if you're still with me, on page 87, lines 3 through 15 in section 34, subsection A is contingency language related to the section on bonuses for certain state employees who entered into letter of agreements. And subsection B is the contingency language related to one-time education funding. Only upon the failure of HB 374, the BSA increase bill currently in House Education to pass with the one-time education increase go into effect. So that concludes my remarks on the language section changes in version O. Overall, the net change between HCS2 and HCS3 for FY27 is the following. An increase of $258,031,800 in unrestricted general funds. An increase of $9,889,000 in designated general funds, an increase of $15,644,600 in other state funds, and an increase of $278,991,900 in federal receipts. The bulk of the UGF increase is due to only a few items: one-time education funding, disaster relief and fire suppression fund deposits, SBR fund deposit, school bond debt reimbursement, and REAA fund deposits, and the governor's March 13th amendments. That concludes the differences between HB 263 version H and HB 263 version O.
I feel like he needs a bottle of water there.
Okay. Yes, I agree. Looks like he has some. So that was a fair amount. I can't imagine there are any questions about any of this. Representative Stapp.
Thank you, Co-Chair Justin, through the chair to Mr. Schroeder. Thanks for being here. You've done a lot of great work this session, continuing on. So first, can we go over what the total add in total funds is? So what I'm looking at is well over $500 million from the last CS to this CS. I see $562 million and $500 million in change. And then there's for fund capitalization, another $68 million, which I don't know if I add those two together because they're separated differently. So I'm curious what the total increase in all funds is through the chair.
Mr. Schroeder, if you're ready for that, otherwise we can take a moment.
Through the chair, I might want to rely on Mr. Painter to answer that question just to go over some clarification on the report, if that's possible.
Sure. Mr. Painter.
No props. Thank you. For the record, Alexi Painter, Legislative Finance Division. So the total change of not including fund transfers is that $562 million. About half of that is adding the Rural Health Transformation Funds of $272 million. So that is about half. And then the rest is mostly the UGF items that Mr. Schroeder went over. The fund transfers, the largest of that, there's several that are positive and negative, but the largest is a transfer into the statutory budget reserve of $50 million. That's not new spending. That's just savings. So I wouldn't really add it as new spend.
Hmm. Paul?
Yes, follow up.
Yeah, thank you. Co-Chair, I have a few technical ones I'd like to go through if you give me. And the Director Pinnock can stay here too because I'm sure he might have to get deferred to. So let's start with the Rural Health Transformation, page 67 of the red line version. I noticed that this is a multi-year appropriation for receipt authority, but there's nothing in the language section that talks about how the state actually has to do things to receive that money that's not subject to clawback. And I'm curious, Director, if you know, since we're looking at going out to June 30th, 2029, in our ability to take this receipt authority, if we know what awards we'll receive and if we'll be subject to clawback if we accept them through the chair without doing the things.
Director.
Through the chair, Representative Stapp, I would say that we know with certainty relatively little about this. We don't know what clawbacks might exist. This is largely the governor's language, except that clarifying the purpose. The governor's language didn't specify the purpose, and this just adds that it's for the purpose, you know, specified in the federal law. And it's not necessarily clear in my discussion with the Department of Health that we know exactly how clawback could occur or would or why, and I think that's still as yet to be determined.
Okay, follow up, Mr. Kocher.
Follow up, Representative Stapp.
Yeah, thank you. On page 70, red line version, the $49,500,000 into the EMHS fund. How does that mechanically work? I know it's a backstop, but is that money effectively encumbered until next fiscal year? Because the way that calendar year grant works is we rarely get it within any type of time frame. I know that currently the HMS spend is burning through it because it's on a calendar year as far as a fiscal year. But this almost $50 million, are we effectively saying that it is literally obligated for this purpose until well after the end of the next budget cycle through the chair?
Mr. Painter.
Through the chair, Representative Stapp. I think we'll know more based on when we actually get the notice of funding opportunity and what that would mean for the timing when we receive it. But based on the information that the department has shared, The expectation is that we will know sometime in maybe September, something like that, August, September, somewhere in that time frame, how much money we'll get. So they would not, assuming we get a grant, they wouldn't dip into this $49.5 million during that period. Wouldn't it be until later? So I would encourage the legislature, while it has a zero estimate, I would encourage the legislature to keep that item in mind, building the budget, that it's possible if we don't get a federal award or if the federal award is severely restricted for whatever reason, that this could come into effect. It's similar to a lot of the items where we have kind of an estimated to be, and you know, we have to keep in mind the downside risk, but I don't think the department would actually start spending the money because they would have general funds already. It would, if it does kick in, it wouldn't really kick in probably until about January. Without any sort of backstop, if we don't get any award, we would likely run out of money for AMHS sometime in like early January, maybe a little earlier given high fuel prices now. And this would give by time essentially for a supplemental, but I don't think they would start spending that money until that point.
Okay, thanks, Director. Follow up, Mr. Kocher?
Yes, follow up.
Page. Yep. Yeah, thank you, Kocher, through the chair. And I don't know if this is a policy call or a legislative finance question. Page 76, regarding the basically blocking of the use of RPLs for the Alaska Gasline Development Project, says very clearly that notwithstanding the section appropriation made in the fiscal year June 30th, 2027 may not be increased under the section of law that governs the RPL process based on the Alaska Gasline Development Corporation's receipt of additional federal receipt authority or statutory designated program receipts. Why would we want to restrict the gas line's ability to accept federal money? Through the chair. Anybody know the answer to the question?
I suspect that Mr. Painter doesn't take a position on that.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Sapp, it's a policy call. It's been in the, that language has been in the budget the last few years. I think the explanation that was given the last time it was, I think the first time it was put in, was that given the structure of the project, it's more likely that any federal or statutory designated program receipts or outside funding would go directly to the developer, not through the state. If we did have a change in project structure, I think the intent would be that the legislature would need to approve such a change, but it is a policy call.
Yeah, I mean, I follow up. I guess I'm not entitled to an answer. I know you can't answer, Director, because it is a policy call. I'm just curious why it would be in there. But I want to shift gears to page 86, which is what, and we'll talk about the item not in the budget, and then fund capitalization. So I know, Director, you and I have talked about this type of maneuver before in my office. And okay, so we're putting $50 million into the SBR, and on page 86 of the budget, lines 23 through 25, it says these funds are for fund capitalization and the funds do not lapse. So through the chair, Director Painter, so in the event that I know we don't do the sweep back to the CBR anymore, but if I put money in for fund capitalization, I put this budget language in my budget, and I'm being asked to take money out of the constitutional budget reserve to pay for last year's expenditures, these funds would in theory be immune from any sweep mechanism back to the CBR. Is that correct?
Mr. Painter.
Through the chair, Representative Sapp, the statutory budget reserve is currently categorized as a non-sweepable fund. I want to make two clarifications. One is that we do the sweep every year. We have not reversed it in a number of years. And the second clarification would be this is FY27 money, so it's not related to any spending from the constitutional budget reserve in the current fiscal year.
Yeah, follow up, Mr. Co-Chair.
Follow up, Representative Sapp.
The fund capitalization is fungible between years, though, isn't it, through the chair?
Through the chair, Representative Sapp, you can't move money backwards necessarily. I mean, you can maneuver it some way, but not. You would need additional steps, I would say. Putting money in the SBR in FY27 doesn't allow you to spend it in FY26.
Correct. Follow up, Mr. Kocher.
Yes, follow up, Representative Sapp.
But let's say if I put money out of the constitutional budget reserve into the higher ed fund, and I could turn around and appropriate the higher end fund by a simple majority, correct, through the chair?
Through the chair, Representative Sapp, yes.
Okay. Follow up, Mr. Co-Chair.
Yes, follow up.
Yeah, the point I'm getting to, Mr. Co-Chair, is the one item I noticed in this $500 million ads and spending, and we can most of that, only half that's UGF, obviously, half that's the Rural Health Transformation Fund. I noticed that we still don't have a dividend in this budget. And if we're going to start squirreling away money out of people's dividends into things like the SBR, which can be appropriated just by a simple majority, I don't know what the intensive purpose of that is, especially when we're still discussing a savings draw from the previous fiscal year. So I'm curious on the policy decision of depositing the entire POMV into the general fund and taking money that would in theory go to people's PFDs and putting them in fund capitalization instead of using that money for their dividends. Because it looks like we're trying to squirrel away money for a different purpose in the future by doing that in this budget. So,
well, I can offer some response. The capitalization occurs mostly in disaster fund and the fire suppression fund. And what we've seen is a pattern of needing more and more dollars to cover those items. And that requires this legislature in the coming session to have a supplemental budget in some circumstances. That's been challenging, as you know. So that's as to that. As to the SBR fund deposit, even though this is our last draft of this bill before we go to amendments, we're still in early stages. We just passed the midway of the session. And there have been lots of calls, both in this building and outside in the media, smart people writing editorials, saying smart things and saying we need to save money for the future. And so this is a reflection of the caucus will in that respect, too. But again, this is we're sort of in the early stages of the game, given that we have committee work to do. We have a floor vote. We have a conference committee. We have vetoes. But as a general principle, we're getting apparently $545 million more, or $515, I think it is, in FY27. And we're electing temporarily to save about 10% of that. That doesn't seem too liberal in terms of the savings. Let me go in order to Representative Bynum and then Galvin and then Shragi.
Yes, thank you, Co-Chair Josephson, I guess to the chair or staff. Representative Stapp had hit on some of the points that I was looking at, and it kind of makes me question why we would be doing some of these maneuvers with putting money into the statutory budget reserve until we have the full detailed budget in front of us. Specifically, one of the major elements, whether it is fully funded or not, that we have in statute is the permanent fund dividend. And that element is not included in this as part of the conversation. And I'm just, it's a bit odd to me that we are putting things in the budget like moves to savings, which I wouldn't disagree with, that we need to be cognizant of that. We have a move in this budget to put over $150 million in one-time funding for BSA, and that is problematic to me. I've ran on the idea that I'm sitting here today on that we don't do one-time funding for education. We actually fund what needs to be funded in education. Yeah, we have billions of dollars of backlog maintenance. We have other programs in here that need immediate need, and it just seems odd to me that we don't have those fundamental parts of this budget, which are going to be some of the most politically divisive and charged issues specifically surrounding the dividend, and it's not in here, and we can't even talk about it as part of the CS. And so I just don't understand why that's not included while we yet move money into things like the reserve, and we're putting one-time funding in for the education component and not addressing some of the major needs of billions of dollars of backlog maintenance. So I was just hoping for maybe a little bit of clarity on where we might end up going.
Sure, I can respond to some of that quickly. First of all, we don't have the resources to fund billions and billions of dollars of deferred maintenance. You're going to see a capital budget that is probably double the size that it was in FY26, perhaps larger. So that's one answer. In terms of the one-time funding, what we've seen, and I had my staff check this, is, and I almost hesitate to say this, it's sort of a knock-on-wood moment, but the governor has been relatively amenable to funding through one-time funding. He's been very unamenable to funding through any BSA growth. And so as to the one-time funding, Representative Bynum, this has been done for years and years, long before you arrived. So it's not atypical. In fact, to not do it in this context would be unusual. So those are some thoughts. As to the PFD, there is space in this budget for a PFD. And in fact, depending on how big you want the capital budget, and I want it double the size or bigger, the PFD could be as much as $1,300 in this budget as it stands right now. And that's before we get into issues about the savings and in the SBR, et cetera. So if you're asking for a full dividend, you can take that up in amendments. Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Joseph. And my request was not a full dividend. My request is that the item is not included in the budget. And so there has to be a projection for endgame when we're bringing a substitute in and we're saying this is what our budget is going to be. And it's not included here. So I was not making a pitch to say full dividend. Mm-hmm. I was only saying that there is no language in here that even gives an indication to the public on what we're thinking about in the budget. And the idea of saying that we will deal with that through budget amendments, it being a major part of our budgeting structure for years, seems odd that it's not included. And it just makes it difficult to have that conversation. As far as the budget overall and the amount of funding that we have, is it the assumption? It's my assumption, or is it the will of the co-chair's office that the budget that we're going to be putting out in front of us is based off of the spring forecast projection? And that was that number around $75 a barrel. And if so, if that's where we're going to be projecting our budget, I have some grave concerns about that. About the instability we've seen in the futures for oil production and for oil, I have some grave concerns that we would be taking this budget and putting one-time funding spending in here and some other mechanisms and using that number and not addressing continued needs of backlog maintenance and other concerns in the state. So I appreciate the comments. Okay. Thank you.
Representative Galvin, then Shiragi, then Moore, then Foster. Representative Galvin.
Sure. Thanks much, Representative Josephson. So this is also my first time saying this. I have a comment, and then I have a question for Mr. Painter. I just want to say that I don't really appreciate the words that we're using here. I don't like the word squirreling away when we're talking about setting aside some funds for savings, maneuvers. I just really feel as though what I'm seeing so far, we're doing our best to protect education, disaster, doing something around the REAA and listening to the governor and amends that he's put in. What I've said to my constituents is, look, we're going to hold on to keeping our government services as best we can. And get us the largest possible PFD. So from what I'm seeing, we're listening to the different departments, trying to figure out how to hold on to what we know is important to our families. And I do appreciate that we're going to get to that PFD because it is an important part of the conversation. The largest possible is important to my districts and I think to others as well. And I wanted to, you know, just share gratitude for your whole team putting this together. I can see this is a lot of work. I do have, you know, some detailed questions, and the one that I would like to ask right now is on page, I believe it's 76, but let me double check here. That is around the section that got added related to not allowing federal receipts for the AGDC should the gas line discussions continue. I guess I just want to know a little bit more around the context of that. I know that our caucus generally just doesn't want to be a roadblock, but we also want to make sure that we're being careful and getting answers when we need answers. And so anyhow, I just, if we could hear any comment, you said that historically this is normal of a phrase to put in, but at this time, since it is the hot topic of the building, whether we all are there yet or not, it is a hot topic. And so I just want to make sure that that the public understands what this means. That's from line 9 to line 13.
So it's a good question. This has been here for a number of years. The other committees and possibly this committee in the near term will be dealing with this issue in earnest through legislation. I think that typically I've sat on LBNA for 12 years of 14 years of service. And we did receive in the COVID era hundreds and hundreds of millions, if not more than $1 billion, that we approved as a committee, a subset of the 60 of us during the interim. And I think this language was there in the other body, I suspect. I can't recall if it was struck. But fundamentally, I think a decision of that, if there are dollars flowing directly to the state and not to, for example, Glenfarne, as Mr. Director Painter said, mm-hmm. We may be in a special session mode rather than LBNA making decisions on behalf of everyone else because of the importance and uniqueness of it. But that's just sort of my interpretation of things at this moment, at 10:03 on Tuesday, March 24th.
Thank you. That explains that. I appreciate that. And I just want to make sure we're mindful of federal awards in general. My mindset is always, you know, we're lucky to be getting so many federal awards over the history of the state. And so I just want to be mindful that, of course, they're the awards that are really, truly good for us. Some of them are questionable. I appreciate that, too. But anyhow, in general, when we know we happen to have a different outlook than we expected in the spring, I appreciate that we're doing it at least in these early stages, putting a set aside of 10%. That felt very responsible to me. And I also understand that this is a very early stages, that there's a lot more to discuss. So thank you.
Okay. Let's go to Co-Chair Shragi.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. Just very briefly, it was described, this committee substitute was described as squirreling away funds. I wanted to go to Director Painter for just a moment. Director Painter, can you remind me what the supplemental is this year for fire suppression disaster relief? And for the public that may be watching, that's the amount that those costs overran our appropriations last year. Can you describe us how much those cost overruns were in those two areas?
For the record, Alexi Painter, Legislative Finance Division, through the Chair, Representative Shragi, for the Disaster Relief Fund, the amount in the Conference Committee Supplemental is $75 million of general funds, and for fire suppression, it's $98 million.
Okay. Follow-up, Co-Chair Shragi.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. And additionally, the $50 million towards the SBR was brought up in prior discussion here in this committee. Can you tell me what the overruns were outside of fire and disaster in terms of supplemental requests from the governor? Again, cost overruns beyond what was appropriated by the legislature last year.
Director Painter.
Roughly.
Through the Chair, Rep. Shragi, I'm trying to do some math in my head, taking out those two items. I think it depends on how you categorize the DOT items.
Let me simplify things. More or less than $50 million as set aside in this budget?
Director Painter.
More.
Substantially more. Yes. Is that correct? Yes. Okay. Thank you. So maybe now a question for Co-Chair Josephson. Sure. Could these set-asides be accurately described as trying to pre-recognized that there may be cost overruns, as have happened just about every single year from just about every administration. Could we say that these set-asides are for us to be able to meet expenses that we expect to come through that we cannot reasonably predict today?
Co-Chair, that was my belief, and that's what I noted on the record this morning. The other body, we don't, of course, work for the other body. We talk about that. But they, in their version of the budget, as to, for example, disaster and fire, which largely prevailed, wanted a more robust capitalization. And the governor vetoed those items down. And sadly, the co-chairs on the other side proved to be right about that need. And in fact, that need was not met. So we're trying to help the 35th legislature in its work in January. And that's why we're doing this.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I want to say that I'm quite proud of the fact that the legislature last year set aside or attempted to set aside those funds so that we can have a more honest picture of what we expect costs to be in the coming year. And I'm proud of you, Mr. Co-Chairman, for putting aside monies to reasonably address these concerns, which frankly I think are quite likely given the historical trends that we've seen here in our finance committee and in our state. So thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I greatly appreciate you taking such a responsible approach to costs that we can expect this next year.
So we're going to Representative Moore, then Co-Chair Foster, and then back to Rep. Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. I think that my question, this first set of questions will probably be for Director Painter, and then I have something for you, Co-Chair Josephson. Okay. You were clear about the one-time, the true UGF growth from HES2 to HES3, and I'm wondering how much of that is ongoing versus one-time funding.
Director.
Through the chair, Representative Moore, so the largest item of that, of the $192 million of agency operations, is the K-12 one-time funding. That's $158 million. So that's the vast majority of it. The remaining amount is 30-something million, and I think there may be, I know there's the $1 million INC OTI. There's a couple of one-time items, but for the most part, other than that large item, the items, the other ones are ongoing, but the by far the largest UGF increase or the bulk of it is that one-time K-12 funding.
Okay.
Follow up. Rep. Moore.
And of the items labeled one time, the ones that you just went over, how in prior years, have they been funded one time or are these ongoing one-time fundings that are technically one time?
Director.
Through the chair, Representative Moore. So, you know, K-12, when we've had outside the formula funding, it does tend to set the bar the next year, but it is a one-time item. And, you know, the next legislature will have to address that item. And the other one that I noted as a one-time item, the geographic differential survey, that would be a true one-time item. Although if there's a survey that comes out that we need more money for geographic differentials, that could be an ongoing cost, but the study itself would be a one-time item.
Follow?
Yes. Okay. So one-time funding is pretty much a standard practice. Then is that something that we do in this budget, it seems like. And having a dividend amount in a CS also has been a long time standing practice. So I guess this question would probably be for Co-Chair Josephson. Is there going to be another CS that reflects the majority's position on a PFD amount?
Fast answer is no. There will not be another CS.
Okay. Thank you for that answer. And then just a quick comment, if you will.
Sure.
I think that the SBR funding, while I agree with the majority of the committee that it's very responsible to put this money into savings, before we are doing that, we should probably be paying our bills and have a clear, balanced budget before moving forward with savings. This feels a little bit like putting the cart before the horse. And so I just hope that we can come together on some of these things and make sure that this is clear for the public that we have a balanced budget before we're just shoving money into savings accounts without paying the bills first. So thank you.
Okay. Co-Chair Foster.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I appreciate the position that you are in with regard to the PFD. And the question of why the PFD is not in the budget is a good one. I think everyone knows that I support the full PFD. I'm going to be voting for the full PFD. I think we can pay for it. You know, if you eliminate oil tax credits, the per barrel oil tax credit, I think, you know, we've paid upwards of $1 billion for those in recent years. You close the S-Corp loophole, you know, and maybe I know that some folks don't like that word. So I'm going to say if you close the S-Corp tax issue for certain oil companies, you know, you start to add these up and you start to approach being able to pay for a full PFD. And so I guess the point I want to make is that, you know, that's where I'm at, but I know that not everybody agrees with that. Not everybody's going to be on board with that. And so the predicament that you're in, Reps, Mr. Co-Chair, is you need a majority of members here to support a number. And we're not there right now. If folks are on board with full PFD right now, I think case closed and we can move on, but I suspect that's not where we're at right now. So I just wanted to say, I think the work continues on that. I know it's an ongoing thing. It's the biggest, it's the elephant in the room. And I just wanted to make sure that for the folks back home, you know, for my district, you know, they know that where I stand and they don't, you know, I don't want them to think that, this is an issue that we're, you know, just setting aside. I know that at the very beginning, there was some misunderstandings that, you know, folks thought that this legislature was going to eliminate the PFD. They thought it was going to be zero. And so I just want to make it clear that, you know, there's just no agreement, I think, in terms of having a majority of this committee in terms of supporting a specific number. And so it's something that we're kind of honing in on, and we're narrowing that number down to something that I think folks are going to be able to agree on, but that's, we're just not there today. So just wanted to point that out. Thank you.
My list shows that I have Representative Bynum in the queue, Stapp, then Allard.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. Appreciate that. I'd heard there was a little conversation about using the term squirreling away. If I use that term, I did not mean to use it in a pejorative way. I didn't take it as a pejorative. I just take it as the common term, as set in an informal phrase of setting aside money incrementally for future use. And I heard the co-chair, you indicated that this idea of putting money in the SBR was there to help the 35th legislature. I'm interested in helping the 34th legislature in the current demands that are in front of us. We have, like I said, billions of dollars of deferred maintenance. We have high oil prices. Yes, that's positive for the budget, but it is definitely a massive impact on communities at home. I know my community, we depend heavily on shipping of products and goods by barge and ship. And with the high fuel prices, that impacts our community. With the high fuel prices, it impacts the Alaska Marine Highway and the IFA that travels between Ketchikan and Prince of Wales. We have tremendous pressures in the community that we are not addressing in this budget, yet we are setting right now to set aside money. The mention of the capital budget was brought up, and I fully support us making capital investments in the state. I've said it many times on this committee. So I just wanted to address the word squirreling. It was, if, like I said, if I don't remember if I said it, I just was not meaning that in a pejorative way, and I didn't take it that way. But I think Representative Foster might have a good idea. Our co-chair Foster might have a good idea here. We put in this budget one-time funding contingent on legislation passing for the $150 million plus for education, saying that's a responsible thing to do. It's been indicated that I said something about a full PFD, which I did not, because I think there's many priorities. But I don't know why we don't have language in this budget that's going to say we're going to follow our current statute for a PFD and then put language in there and say pursuant to legislation passing. We don't ever do that. I think that that's something that maybe you consider. And that wouldn't even be one-time funding. That would just be following the statute. So we got real problems in the statutes. So I would have loved to have seen that included in here. I would love to know exactly what our target number is. I would love to know what we indicate to put aside for capital. I don't see all those things here. I find that a little bit problematic at this point in the game if we are not going to have another CS and we're just going to depend on the free-for-all of amendments as we move forward. So appreciate that, and that'll be the last comment I have for today.
All right, Representative Stapp.
Yep, thank you, Chair Justin, through the chair to Director Painter. Constitutionally, we are subject to a CBR repayment. How much do we currently owe in the Constitutional Budget Reserve, our savings account?
Director.
Through the chair, Representative Stapp, something on the order of 11 or 12 billion. I don't remember the exact number.
Mr. Kircher. Yeah, I see. I did use the term squirreling away money. I'll stand by that term because I see we owe $11 billion to our constitutional budget reserve, which is a constitutional repayment obligation. I don't see anything in this budget that intentionally puts money outside of LAPS into the CBR. Am I wrong about that? Through the chair to Director Painter.
Director.
Through the chair, Representative Stapp, there's no appropriation into the CBR at this point. There is an unappropriated amount at this point that doesn't get appropriated, then it would go to the CBR, but I assume most of that will get spent.
Okay, follow up, Mr. Kutcher. So if I'm putting $50 million in the SPR, nothing prevents me from putting that same $50 million into the CBR other than a policy decision. Is that fair through the chair?
Director Painter.
Through the chair, Representative Sapp, yes, that's true.
Okay. I have one more question to the co-chair, and then I'll be silent, Mr. Sure. Co-chair. And this would be to Co-chair Foster. Co-chair, you are the co-chair of bills at this finance committee. I heard you talk about how you were in favor of oil taxes per barrel credit, that type of stuff, to fund an expenditure. Is that something I should expect to see here being heard in this committee, or is that a future finance committee bill in order to do that here in this committee? Or is that the position of the majority caucus through the chair?
Foster.
I certainly can't speak on the behalf of the majority on this specific issue. I know that everyone's got diverse opinions, but I very much am glad you asked the question because I know that over in the other body, we have an omnibus oil and tax bill that restructures, raises the floor, hardens the floor with regard to oil taxes, reduces to some extent per barrel tax credits, and I think it's a great start. And if it makes it over to this side, my intent would be definitely to hear it. So thank you.
All right, we're going to go to Rep. Allard and then Galvin.
Can I'm waiting for an answer on something. Can you go to Galvin and then come back to me, please, Chair?
If it is relevant to your – so you think that Rep. Galvin, you don't know what she's going to ask, but it's going to help you answer
something. No, I'm waiting on somebody to respond to me here, so I act the appropriate
apologies.
Question.
Rep. Sorry. Galvin.
thank you, Co-Chair Josephson, through the chair. I just wanted to put on record that to me, what we're seeing happening is not a free-for-all. I think we're doing a pretty good job as a committee to look through each of these items. When it comes to the PFD, I appreciate that that needs to be answered. I also wanted to mention that we're plugging away. We're only at 60 days and we have quite a few days to keep, working through this very carefully. I think that the question around education is certainly critical here. And the part I really wanted to ask Mr. Painter about is our maintenance. This has been a thorn in mind for a long time. And so when we think about major maintenance, have other states established ways of budgeting to be mindful of how to get at that big, let's say, glacier that's hiding under the water that we know is there that's so big? If you could share with us maybe an example of how another state is doing it. The one that comes to mind for me is Utah, but I believe you may know more about it than I do.
Director Painter.
Through the chair, Representative Galvin. So what Utah does is they have a statute that says that for their capital budget, they'll first set a level of funding for maintenance and renewal that's based on a percentage of the total value of their state facilities, and that that level must be funded before they can opt to fund any new construction. In Alaska, we have sort of a stronger appropriations process than some states. So, you know, we have no dedicated funds and we can override statutes. So those things, if we had them in Alaska, they would be guidelines you could choose to follow or not. but, you know, our, for example, for schools, our major maintenance, our school major maintenance and school construction funds don't have a particular formula to follow for the legislature about how much to appropriate each year. That's something that could be addressed, for example, if you wanted to create.
Thank you. Follow up, if I may.
Quickly, we still have the mental health shield as
so
well.
So the last one really quickly is around the fire funding. I know and that we've talked about this for the last 4 years that I know of, because it's always come in as part of our amended budget. Always have we gone over. And I remember at one point our asking you to put together from years back, going back many years, what a five-year average is. And I guess what I want to know is that a good way to come up with the right amount of money to set aside to look at the last 5 years and come up with an average?
Director.
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, I think that's, you know, again, our statute doesn't give a guidance. That is a pretty common approach by other states, is to look at an average amount, a five-year average or a 10-year average, or there's some, I think Washington does a 10-year average, but drops the high and low year, for example. There's all sorts of ways you can do it. A five-year average is as good as any. We don't have really a projection going forward from the department, although in talking to the department, they've greatly improved their tracking, and maybe that's something they could work towards in the future. But right now, they don't really have a forward projection. So I think an average is probably about the best we can get to.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Rep. Allard, then we're going to move forward.
Chair, you're chair of the operating budget, so I'm just going to ask you this question.
Okay.
So I'm a little bit interested in, you said there's one-time funding just in case the BSA bill doesn't pass for the $158 million, roughly. So I'm curious on why, at the end of the 33rd legislature, we had people banging down our doors about inside funding, not one-time funding. Mm-hmm. What is it that changed with you that you decided that you just want to do the one-time funding instead of inside funding?
Well, I sort of answered, but I'll do it again. It's fine. Okay. What changed in me, I knew this was coming on August 2nd when I got back on an airplane and left Juneau. I knew it then.
Yeah.
What changed in me was we have a public school crisis that is worse than last year because they've spent through their reserves. And I don't think the public schools are lying about their situation. I think they're deadly serious about it. And I know that the governor has been more receptive to one-time funding. I know how incredibly challenging it is to pass a BSA bill. Recall that Senator Dunbar flew from Poland to make it happen on August 2nd. And I'm all for this BSA bill, but I think it's going to be rough seas. And so we're using an approach on one-time funding that has been used over and over and over in the last several years.
So may I just follow up? Then I would expect in the future that we come together on that realization so that we don't have individuals lining the halls, banging down our doors because we're trying to sell one time our inside funding versus outside funding. And I'm glad that this committee has come to that realization. I appreciate your thoughts.
Okay.
Thank you.
Co-chair Foster.
Yeah.
I mean, co-chair Josephson.
Yes.
I apologize for interrupting. But you'd made a comment just now that said a senator came and made that happen. There are more than 45 members or more than, I think it was 46 members that passed that bill and took a stand on the legislation. And there were 45 members that actually came to this building and all stood together to make a statement on that. It wasn't just one senator. It was 45 members that voted yes on that. And it required all 45 members to make that happen.
My calendar will call me away pretty soon.
So I apologize, but I
just, No. Your point is so obvious that I didn't make it. What I was trying to highlight is what we did August 2nd is sort of miraculous.
Yeah. Okay.
It's virtually never happened in Alaska history. So that's what I was trying to highlight. And it was more dramatic to talk about people flying from Eastern Europe. And that's why I did that. Okay. At this point, I'm going to remove my objection to the adoption of version O. Is there further objection?
Yeah.
There's further objection. We've all talked about our objections. So I'm going to call the roll.
Kidding. Indulge 30 seconds, Coach.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I just really relatively quickly just put on the record. My objection is relatively simple. I keep hearing that it's early in the process. This is now the third CS. There's no dividend in the budget. I'm kind of agnostic on the size and scope of the PFD. I think it's important that you prioritize what you value in life. And this budget, again, values every other appropriation item above the dividend. And you're vastly running out of available revenue to appropriate a dividend. If we keep adopting $400 million in general fund spending, which is the difference between the first House CS and now the third House CS. And that's all I have to say.
Okay. With that, we'll call the roll. Will the clerk call that, please?
Representative Stapp.
No.
Representative Jimmy.
Yes.
Representative Moore.
No.
Representative Galvin.
Yes.
Representative Hannon.
Yes.
Representative Allard.
No.
Representative Tomaszewski.
No.
Representative Bynum.
No.
Representative Schrage.
Yes.
Representative Foster.
Yes.
Representative Josephson.
Yes.
6 yay, 5 nay.
So by a vote of 6-5, the House Finance Committee has adopted the version moved for by co-chair Schrage. It's version O of House Bill 263, the operating budget. We'll now take up a motion as to the mental health bill, which should be 265. Do I have a motion on the committee substitute for House Bill 265, version H?
Mr. Co-chair, I move that the House Finance Committee adopt committee substitute for House Bill 265, Finance, Work Draft 34-GH2502/H, marks March 21st, 2026, as our working document.
I'll object quickly for the purposes of an explanation from Mr. Schroeder. Mr. Schroeder, as before, can you please explain the significant changes?
For the record, Alexander Schroeder promised to move quickly. Before the committee is the proposed committee substitute for HB 265, the mental health bill, work draft 34-GH2502/H. A red line comparing HB 265 version G and HB 265 version H is included in the members' packets. Like the operating bill, I'll walk through the red line comparison. There are three changes in the mental health bill. The first change is on page 3, lines 3 through 5. Here, the committee substitute removes the Department of Family and Community Services cross-appropriation transfer language. The effect of having this language in the operating and the mental health bill is it would allow the department to double their cross-appropriation transfer authority. We believe that it was erroneously added to the mental health bill, therefore we removed it. This language reduced to $5 million was maintained in the operating bill. The second change is also on page 3, lines 31 and 32. Same as the previous change, removes cross-appropriation transfer third authority in the mental health bill. Similar language is maintained in the operating bill. The third change is on page 15, line 1 to page 16, line 10, section 9, subsections A and B. Here it adds the monetary terms of agreement the governor submitted as part of his March 13th amendments. And that concludes the differences between HB 265 version G and HB 265 version H.
Okay. I'm inclined to remove my objection to these, to this version. I do so now. Is there any further objection to adopting version H of the mental health bill? Seeing and hearing none, the committee adopts version H. With that, I will be setting an amendment deadline on House Bill 263 and House Bill 265 for this Thursday, March 26th at 5 p.m.
Jacked.
All right. Let's go ahead and hear your objection.
Yeah, Mr. Co-chair, it would be very polite if you could maybe make that Friday or Monday. I don't know what your time schedule is, but it's Tuesday at 10:30, and that gives us less than 48 hours to basically draft amendments to the operating budget.
More than 48.
It's Tuesday. The amendment ends Thursday, right?
No, I understand the time. Are the other objections? Well, let's hear from Representative Bynum, and then I'll go to Rep. Allard. Just so I would get the nature of the objections.
Yes. Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. My objection is the time frame necessary. I feel like that is too short of a time to take in what we've just looked at, and I would ask politely for additional time. and I will defer to Representative Stapp to help organize that time.
Representative Ellard.
Thank you. And I agree that the time frame for us to go fully through this and for it to sink in. But my actual concern is that I've been having difficulty with Ledge Legal being able to get us our amendments back. So I really want them to have enough time to get our amendments. And that is a huge consideration with their workload.
I'm going to take a 20-second, maybe 30-second at ease at 10:31. We're at ease. We're back on record at 10:32. I'm going to propose that the deadline be noon on Friday. Looks like that's the 27th of March. Noon on Friday, the 27th of March. That's 3.5 days. Well, it's 3 days plus a bit. And we would ask that you submit amendments through the Legislative Finance Division website by going to legfin.akleg.gov. Clicking on Amendment System under the operating drop-down menu and logging in using your username and password credentials given to you by the Legislative Finance Division. LFD can assist you with drafting your amendments. If you are drafting an amendment that requires a language attachment, you will need to coordinate with Legislative Legal Services before submitting your amendment in final. All right, so House Bill 263 and 265 both have deadlines of noon on Friday the 27th. That concludes our business this morning. Our next House Finance Committee meeting is scheduled for this afternoon at 1:30 p.m. At that meeting, we will hear two bills, HB 52, Minors and Psychiatric Hospitals, and HB 262, Number of Superior Court Judges. If there's no other business before this committee, we will adjourn at 10:34 a.m. We're adjourned.